Gandalf, my old friend, this will be a night to remember.
Broadcasting from the Three Farthing Stone in the Shire, Middle Earth, this is the Secret Fire Podcast, sent to burn at the heart of the world, episode number 3. I'm Michael.
I'm Brendan.
I'm Micah.
On this episode, controlling rings and controlling themes. Has some power chosen Frodo for such a time as this? We invite you to come along, join the fellowship, become a servant of the Secret Fire each week here on the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission transmission.
Gentlemen, are you ready to talk some Tolkien today?
I am.
I'm pumped up. I am super pumped up because we just listened before we went live to the Lonely Mountain Band, one of my very favorite bands. John D. Bartolo last night on Facebook, they posted a link to this single that's available. It was recorded live at the New York Tolkien Conference, a live version of my absolute favorite song by Lonely Mountain Band, Ballad of Aigloos. That one gets me just pumped up.
It was pretty epic.
It's an epic song. And Brendan, where can listeners go to procure them a copy of that single?
Well, they can go to lonelymountainband.bandcamp.com.
And do it. Do it, listeners. Get a copy of this. Of course, we've been listening to that great song, the studio version, for some 5 or 6 years now, and I don't know. I can't wait till we get to a point where we can talk in depth about Gil. Well, it depends on who you are. Some people pronounce his name Gil-galad. Some pronounce it Gil-galad. Gil-galad.
Oh, Gil-galad, sweet Gil-galad. Is that it?
No.
Is that it? Did I get a point?
Mike, are we broadcasting from the Three Farthing Stone right now?
Yes, we are.
Standing there, we are here on a Saturday at 1:34 p.m. Central Time. This may be our temporary new permanent recording time.
Maybe so.
So once we can nail that down, which let's just call it this time now, we can start inviting people to join us in Lotro, a meeting at the Three Farthing Stone on the Arkenstone server. Last episode, we had some great conversation. I thought that chapter was packed with information.
It was.
This one just happens to be.
If you call that packed, what do you call this one?
Wow.
Did you anybody have any addendums or anything that they wanted to throw in from the last episode?
Nah.
No, nothing you forgot to talk about? All right, Brendan. What did you think? Have you read this chapter before? I know for listeners, let's catch listeners up. If you're just joining us, this is technically Brendan's first run through the Lord of the Rings book.
Yes.
And I know you had started many months ago, but I stopped you.
Yes.
Nope,
stop.
We'll make a show out of this. Had you gotten this before?
I had, yes. All right. I'd actually gotten to chapter 4.
All right, so, all right.
But this, revisiting this chapter.
Yes.
Man.
You know, it actually, there were some questions arose on the last episode. I can't remember specifically. We'll leave that up to the listeners to search that out. Questions in the last chapter that are actually answered in this chapter.
Oh, there you go.
And, you know, we don't want to give away the farm on each episode because it's so easy to use many points in these chapters, Micah, right, as a springboard. Boop! Okay, we'll jump over. Let's the big old trampoline of Tolkien, the Tolkien trampoline. Hey! That may be a thing now. That may be
no,
a trope.
That's not a thing.
A Tolkien?
No, the Tolkien trampoline.
Don't feed his fire.
That's it.
don't give
so
him material.
So many things as we're reading, we can just use the Tolkien trampoline to jump into the appendices or Lost Tales, all these things.
For it to be a trope, you need a sound effect. Like a boing, boing, boing.
I got those.
Okay.
But I won't lay that on anybody. Anyway, so we're trying to take it one bit at a time.
Yes.
And not go too far off onto rabbit trails, unless a rabbit trail has just presented itself and says none shall pass.
Yes.
Okay.
And then we have to.
And then
we have no choice in the matter.
All right, let's jump in. Let's start talking about The Shadow of the Past, Chapter 2. Brendan, what'd you think?
Oh, you know, the last chapter, it was nice and it was pleasant to be able to...
You've already read the last chapter?
The previous chapter.
Oh, okay.
That gummit, Michael. the previous chapter, it was easy to break that down into nice sizable chunks. With this chapter, you get, oh, here's a little exposition of Frodo's life after Bilbo. Oh, here's a little Samwise Gamgee and Ted Sandyman. And then you've got this big whopping chunk of Frodo and Gandalf.
Oh, and just jumps the information.
Yeah.
It's an information
jump. It's like a data download.
Yes. Data dump.
Yeah, data dump. Yeah, you said that. But hey, so much stuff going on.
Yeah.
Just in Frodo and Gandalf's conversation alone. Because you get a history of the ring. You get a brief glimpse into how the ring affected Bilbo. How it affected Gollum. Or, excuse me, Smeagol. You know, we'll get into that here in a second. Well,
how it affects Frodo.
Yeah.
We're going to see almost a repeat with Frodo of what happened with Bilbo.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And again, to remind listeners, we aren't going in depth on every single point, right? We're expecting you listeners to read along with us.
Sure.
We're going to bring out some of our favorite points from each chapter, mm-hmm. and then we will give you all the ways to contact us at the end of the show so that you can share your thoughts with us. You know, the best way would be to call our voicemail, our hotline, our Hobbit hotline. We'll give you that number later on. Also, if you go to our website at gctnetwork.com, you'll see even on your mobile device, there will be a tab down at the bottom to leave us a voicemail via SpeakPipe.
You
can do that as well. Let's jump into it. First segment,
hey, we've got, like I said, this exposition of what Frodo's life looks like after Bilbo's gone. And it's mainly... we see this western migration of all the different characters of Middle-earth, the different folk of Middle-earth, and they have to pass through the Shire,
yes,
westward, because they've got something happening in the east that's going down.
Here's what I like, how the chapter starts off with this little ditty. This just tickles me. It became a fireside story for young hobbits, and eventually Mad Baggins, who used to vanish with a bang and a flash and reappear with bags of jewels and gold, became a favorite character of legend and lived on long after all the true events were forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
We're still in that phase of the book where we are learning about hobbits and what they are like.
Yeah.
Because just a few sentences down, says, you know what, but when it really comes down to it, the blame for Bilbo and his strange behavior, right? The blame was mostly laid on Gandalf.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, Gandalf even tells Frodo, I'm not really welcome here anymore.
Yeah. And I think that sentence right there is not saying that that's what Tolkien wants us to think. That's what Tolkien is telling us that the other hobbits are thinking.
Yes.
It's putting us in the mindset of them. They see Gandalf as a bad influence on Bilbo, on Frodo, on anything he touches in the Shire. His probably only saving grace is the wonderful fireworks that he can build.
Yes.
And craft. And whatnot.
You know, so. And we learned in the first chapter that the Saxville Bagginses, if there was anything that they loathed more than Bilbo, it was Frodo.
Yeah.
They like Frodo was an outsider. You don't belong here. You ain't from around here.
Well, they thought he was too hoity-toity.
Well, and also somehow
some people just get all the.
What did Bilbo do with his wheel? I mean, Micah, Otho was the
heir.
Yeah, the heir apparent, and Bilbo finds a loophole, and. Writes mm-hmm. them out of the will, and gives everything to Frodo, and so this blame that was laid on Gandalf and this already you know, Mad Baggins and how crazy Bilbo, he's cracked and all this stuff, and then there's this animosity that grows against Frodo because, you know, it says indeed. Frodo at once began to carry on Bilbo's reputation for oddity.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and Bilbo with his keeping up, boy,
That's going to happen a lot.
I know it, isn't it?
Keeping up the birthday celebration for
yeah,
Bobo.
Yeah, even after he's gone. And people just start to wonder, you know, why is he still doing this? Yep. Is it a mourning thing? Is it a... just something he's trying to work
it's
out.
It's odd. Yeah. It's an odd, you know. Well, that's what the previous White Wizard would say.
Who is that odd little fellow?
Okay, we meet some of his friends. You know, Frodo continued the tradition of Bilbo by living alone.
Yeah,
but he had a good many friends.
Yeah,
mostly among the younger hobbits and descendants of the old Took.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Folko Boffin and Fredegar Bulger.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? Were two of these. But his closest friends were Peregrine Took, usually called Pippin, and Mary Brandybuck. His real name was Meriadoc, but that was seldom remembered.
Pippin and Mary.
But Frodo is exhibiting these odd behaviors, so his reputation is actually well deserved. What's he doing?
Remind me, I didn't highlight that.
Well, people see him far from home. Just walking in the hills and woods under the starlight. Good, sensible folk don't behave in ways.
Oh, yes,
And then they also notice that he's showing signs of good preservation as well.
Mm-hmm. He's not aging as rapidly. Well, then again, same thing as Bilbo. He didn't age.
Right.
Hardly ever.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, he really kept from age, you know, 50, almost 51. He was, right, because he turned 51 right after Riddles in the Dark, for all intent and purposes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's his birthday was on the barrel ride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's something we touched on, and I mentioned this, and it was a little bit of foreshadowing, but it came home to roost in this chapter. Speaking of Frodo, but half unknown to himself, the regret that he had not gone with Bilbo was steadily growing. And he found himself wondering at times, especially in the autumn, my favorite season, about the wild lands and strange visions of mountains that he had never seen came into his dreams. And like he says, he began to say to himself, perhaps I shall cross the river myself one day. Which river do you think he's talking about, Micah? Do you think that's the Brandywine?
Yeah, I would think.
Yeah.
Isn't that the only river in the Shire?
Well, is Bywater, the Bywater River, that's a river. I mean, that's not a stream. It's more than a stream, right?
Oh, yeah, Bywater.
And, yeah. So they cross that. I mean, obviously. I mean, Hobbiton and Bywater and whatnot. So, yeah, he's probably talking about the Brandywine. To which the other half of his mind always replied, not yet. You see, Tolkien does a great job painting what's going on inside of Frodo. He looked at maps and wondered what lay beyond their edges. Maps made in the Shire showed mostly white spaces beyond its borders. That still fits in with that bunny burrow mentality from Zootopia.
A nice little protective bubble.
Yes.
Rests over the Shire. They're protected from the outside world. But Michael, there are rumors of strange things happening in the world outside, as Gandalf had not at that time appeared or sent any message for several years, Frodo gathered all the news that he could from elves who were passing through, from dwarves who were passing through, going west toward the Grey Havens. Is that right?
Yes. So this gets us to that migration that's taking place that Frodo sees, but
nobody else either they do see it, or they don't see it. They're just not affected by it either way.
No, it doesn't concern us.
It doesn't.
We're sensible folk.
Nose to the ground.
Yes. Actually, noses, eyes cast down. We're going to talk more about that coming up later on in this episode. You know, the Grey Havens, man, I wanted to go on a huge trip and talk about the Grey Havens. Let's get just a couple of points on that. Well, it's also known as Mithlund, and it was a seaport on the Gulf of Lune, and way far western Eriador. Micah, is it the equivalent of this? Does it exist in Lord of the Rings Online?
The Grey Havens?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
Unfortunately not.
But there is up there in Eriador, when you go down, what is it, Celadrim or whatever? There's
Celadrim or something. Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce it. It would
be a hard C. But the ports down there kind of remind me a lot of that. So if you want to see that in-game, folks, you can go and visit there and just imagine that it is the Grey Havens. But long history, maybe we'll get to that at the end of the book, right? But one thing that I wanted to point out was Gil-galad. I think it's Gil-galad. I like that one better.
No, I like the first one.
Gil-galad.
There is a bomb.
All right.
Gil-galad.
We're going. He has something to do with the Grey Havens, but we're going to discuss him when we get to Weathertop. Because, again, going back to the beginning of the show, we have the best song. We have the best song. Anyway, but about Third Age 1000, the Astari, or the wizards, arrived in Middle-earth at the Grey Havens. They arrived at Middle-earth at the Grey Havens. This is an important place.
Hmm.
And that was Círdan, upon meeting Gandalf, gave him Narya, the Elven Ring of Fire. And that ties in to this chapter. That's why I wanted to bring that up. And we'll especially hit a lot of this when we finish the book and get into the appendices.
Hey, there you go.
So moving along.
There you go. Moving on. Are we ready for a little Samwise and Ted?
Yes, Michael, take us over to the Green Dragon Inn, because everybody knows there's only one dragon in the Shire, and that's green.
That's green.
Dude. Okay, this is an important scene.
Yeah, you've got Samwise really, as a plot device, acting as a forward, getting us ready to meet the Ents, the tree giants, getting us ready
tree
to...
Tree herders.
You've got Samwise still, much like the Master Gaffer in the first chapter, defended Bilbo's honor, Sam is still defending Frodo's honor.
Yeah.
Amongst other things.
Well, in what way?
Well, let me tell you. I didn't highlight that either.
Well,
you keep going. I'll look for it.
It's just this whole exchange with Ted Sandyman. That everything that Sam says, Ted just contradicts.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even an argument. This is not good argument. He just flat out contradicts everything that he says. Here's Sam. Queer things you do here these days, to be sure. Said Sam. Ah, said Ted, you do if you listen. But I can hear fireside tales and children's stories at home if I want to. Man, that's just rude.
That's like when people say, ah, Harry Potter is a children's book. Why do you read those? It's like,
do you go from there?
Yeah.
That's not an argument. You know, really back up your claim. You're just contradicting, or you're being... and Sam, no doubt you can, retorted Sam, and I dare say there's more truth in some of them than you reckon.
Yeah.
Okay. Who invented these stories anyway? Take dragons now. No, thank you, said Ted. Ted, I won't. I heard tell of them when I was a youngster, but there's no call to believe in them now. There's only one dragon in Bywater, and that's green, he said, getting a general laugh. All right, said Sam, laughing with the rest. Sam is giving us a good example of what to do in that situation, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do you do when you just have a naysayer? That's all that is. It reminds me of that Monty Python skit? I've come here for an argument. No, you haven't.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Argument clinic.
Hey, no, yes, I have.
Yes. No. Yeah, that's not an argument. Yes, it is. No, it's just, oh, yeah, it's just pounds. Contradiction.
Yeah.
It is not. Listen. We should have clipped that and played that here. But Sam laughs it off to Ted about Ted Sandyman and says, but what about these tree men, these giants, as you might call them? They do say that one bigger than a tree was seen up way beyond the North Moors not long back. Who's they? My cousin Hal, for one. He works for Mr. Boffin at Overhill and goes up to the North Farthing for the hunting. He saw one, says he did, perhaps.
Yeah. Very confrontational.
Just a creep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we learn a little more about Ted Sandyman at the end of the book.
Oh, really now?
Oh, yeah. But Sam says, but this one was as big as an elm tree. and walking 7 yards to a stride. If it was an inch, then I bet it wasn't an inch. What he saw was an elm tree, as like as not, but this one was walking, I tell you. And there ain't no elm tree on the North Moors. Then Hal can't have seen one, said Ted. This is great writing, though.
Yeah.
Because you know this person already. I got your number.
Mm-hmm.
Then, anyway. What? Well, and I've heard tale elves are moving west. They do say that they're going to the harbors out way beyond the White Towers. That harkens back to the prologue when we discussed the prologue. Sam waved his arm vaguely, right? Because neither he nor any of them knew how far it was to the sea, past the old towers, beyond the western borders of the Shire. But it was an old tradition that away over there stood the Grey Havens, from which times the elven ships set sail, never to return. We can learn how to behave in a situation like that when you're under fire from just a creep. Just laugh it off.
Yep.
You know, because that's what they're going to do. They're going to, especially if you're surrounded by people, they're going to try and get the crowd on their side. And what's one of the best way of doing that? Getting them to laugh along with you at the person that you're directing the snarky comment to.
Yeah.
Right? So Sam just laughs. Yeah. What did you, what'd you like about this exchange? What's Tolkien showing us? What are we gaining from this? Why is this here?
Well, again, like I said, and I found the passage I was looking for. At the end of all this, after the contradictory, very argumentative Ted Sandyman, we have this little glimpse into the respect that Samwise has for Frodo.
Yes,
the same respect that the Master Gaffer had for Bilbo. And actually, just a little further down from where you stopped reading. Sam picks up and says, now there's Mr. Baggins now that I work for. He told me that they were sailing and he knows a bit about the elves, and old Mr. Bilbo knew more. Many's the talk I had with him when I was a little lad.
Yep.
Sam knows these things because Frodo knew these things, because Bilbo knew these things, and Bilbo experienced them for himself. Oh, they're both cracked, said Ted. Leastways, old Bilbo was cracked, and Frodo was cracking. If that's where you get your news from, you'll never want for moonshine. And then, you know, he leaves. Well, friends, I'm off to your good health. He drinks out his mug and goes out noisily. And then Sam sits silent and said no more.
Yep.
And he's kind of taken that blunt hit to the relationship. But then again, he knows that his love for Frodo is still strong, the same way Master Gaffer's love for Bilbo and his admiration and respect for Bilbo was still strong, no matter what anybody might, however somebody else might try to break it.
Yeah.
It shows that resolve.
Well, and as he's, you know, getting up, knew he was going to have a busy day tomorrow if the weather cleared, the grass was growing fast, but Sam had more on his mind than gardening. After a while, he sighed and got up and went out.
He wants to go meet some elves.
He does.
Oh, wait, that's later on.
I love this because I've always thought, Micah, especially in Lotro, doesn't it seem that the Green Dragon is pretty far from the hill?
No.
Do you think, I mean, walking distance?
It's like 400 meters away, but...
Well, it just seems, when you're walking, it seems to take a while, but he walked, says he walked home under the early stars through Hobbiton and up the hill, whistling softly and thoughtfully. Huh. Okay, next segment, section.
Oh, here we go.
What?
Frodo and Bilbo, Frodo and Gandalf.
Yes.
Part one.
Okay, so we have a long time span from... well, this is just the first interaction, right? But mm-hmm. We still have Gandalf. See, the movies, Peter Jackson's films, did not portray this at all, the long stretch of time that Bilbo was at Bag End. But we start now, because for 3 years after the party, Gandalf had been away.
Mm-hmm.
Then he paid for... So 3 years, then he pays Frodo a brief visit.
It's almost like he just poked his head in.
He did, because it says after taking a good look at him, he went off again.
Yeah. during the next year or so, year or two, he had turned up fairly often, coming unexpectedly after dusk and going off without warning before sunrise. He would not discuss his own business and journeys, and seemed chiefly interested in small news about Frodo's health and doings.
Yeah.
So he's just keeping tabs on Frodo.
Then
for now.
And then suddenly his visit ceased.
Mm-hmm. And then it's 9 years until he comes again. And then I like it how Gandalf says, you look about the same as ever, Frodo. Oh, so do you, Frodo replied.
But secretly,
he thought that Gandalf looked older and much more careworn. He pressed him for news about himself and the wide world, and soon they were in the deep talk, and they stayed up far into the night.
And that is a throwback to the last lines of the first chapter, where Frodo sees Gandalf go off, but it looks like he had a burden. He's under a burden,
yeah,
a heavy burden. And there's another allusion to John Bunyan. Pilgrim's Progress, that mm-hmm. burden on his back. Something is hunching him over, yeah, wearing him down.
Yep, yep.
But Gandalf stayed a little bit that time, and the next morning after a late breakfast, the wizard was sitting with Frodo by the open window of the study. A bright fire was on the hearth, but the sun was warm and the wind was in the south. Everything looked fresh, and the new green of spring was shimmering in the fields and on the tips of the trees' fingers. Gandalf was thinking of a spring nearly 80 years before, when Bilbo had run out of Bag End without a handkerchief. His hair was perhaps whiter than it had been, and his beard and eyebrows were perhaps longer, and his face more lined with care and wisdom, but his eyes were as bright as ever. And he smoked and blew smoke rings with the same vigor and delight. What does Frodo say? Well, last night you began to tell me strange things about my ring, Gandalf. And then you stopped because you said that such matters were best left until daylight.
Mm-hmm.
Wow!
Don't you think you better finish now? You say that the ring is dangerous, far more dangerous than I guess. In what way?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Okay, so Gandalf starts to recount the story of these rings of power. Mm-hmm. The rings of power. In Origian, long ago, many elven rings were made. Magic rings, as you call them. And they were, of course, of various kinds. Some more potent and some less. And talks about, the lesser rings were only an essay in the craft before it was full grown.
Yeah.
To the elven smiths, they were but trifles. Yet still, to my mind, dangerous for mortals. But the great rings, the rings of power, they were perilous. A mortal, Frodo, who keeps one of the great rings, does not die. But he does not grow or obtain more life. He merely continues until at last every minute is a weariness.
Is that what happened to Bilbo?
Is starting to.
Starting to.
Because yeah. He does talk later on in our next encounter with Gandalf. You know, he makes Frodo understand, hey, Bilbo, in fact, let me jump ahead just a bit here. Bilbo is the only person that has given up a ring of his own accord.
Mm-hmm.
It took my help, but he gave it up nonetheless. So, yeah, he was starting, well, I'm old, Gandalf. I may not look it. What does he say?
I'm beginning to feel it in my heart of hearts.
Yeah. I feel stretched. Like too much butter spread over bread. Or not enough butter. Too much. Or butter spread over too much bread. I don't know. I do that. Boy, it would have been a powerful moment there for the listeners. Yes. Sooner or later, if he is strong or well-meaning to begin with, but neither strength nor good purpose will last. Sooner or later, the dark power will devour him. Bilbo knew more than he told you, I'm sure, said Gandalf. He would certainly never have passed on to you anything that he thought would be a danger, even though I promised to look after you. That's in response to Frodo saying, how terrifying. You know?
And don't forget, Samwise is snipping outside the window.
Oh, are we already there?
Yeah, how terrifying, said Frodo. There was another long silence. The sound of Sam Gamgee cutting the lawn came in from the garden.
So we're at 17 years from the long-expected party.
Yeah.
17 years has passed.
Man.
You know, I mean, Frodo said, he said that it was growing, or was this? No, Gandalf continuing. He said that it was growing on his mind, and he was always worrying about it. But he did not suspect that the ring itself was to blame.
He thought that he was at fault.
Yeah.
Not the. He didn't think anything was wrong with the ring.
He didn't know what was amiss. Yeah. Maybe that ties into why, I know, it's because I need an adventure. I don't belong here anymore. Mm-hmm. I need an adventure. Mm-hmm. Do you think that may play into it?
I think it could.
What else? Continue on. I'm sucking up all the air in the room here.
E. Well, it gets to the point where Gandalf challenges Frodo. Hey, give me that ring.
Yeah.
Then he throws it into the fire.
Yes.
And Frodo freaks out because, oh no, it's just a regular old ring. It's gonna tarnish. Something bad's gonna happen. But then, I don't know. Gandalf takes it out and shows the inscription.
Takes out with tongs.
With tongs, yeah, because he can't
touch
himself.
I'm not touching it.
Yeah. Takes that out with the tongs, shows Frodo that glowing red inscription that's in the... what language is that?
The language of Mordor, the black speech?
Black speech, yeah. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And that's where we start getting into the lore...
Of the ring.
Not the lore, duh, but right. The lore of the ring.
Let's listen to the ring verse as read by... The professor himself, J.R.R. Tolkien.
I cannot read the fiery letters, said Frodo in a quavering voice. No, said Gandalf, but I can. The letters are Elvish, an ancient mode, the language that of Mordor, which I will not utter here. This in the common tongue is what is said, close enough. One ring to rule them all, one ring to find them, one ring to bring them all, in the darkness bind them. There's only two lines of a verse long known in Elven lore. Three rings for the Elven kings under the sky, seven for the dwarf lords in their halls of stone, nine for mortal men doomed to die, one for the dark lord on his dark throne in the land of Mordor where the shadows lie. One ring to rule them all, one ring to find them, one ring to bring them all, and in the darkness bind them in the land of Mordor where the shadows lie.
That's how it's supposed to be read.
That was pretty
exactly.
Epic.
Exactly.
Especially with Micah. Epic. Micah, where are you right now?
I'm in Bag End.
At the fire?
Yes.
The fire's crackling. That's the fire that the ring was thrown into.
Man.
Thank you, Professor Tolkien, for reading that. Okay. Continue.
Well, it's just interesting, this leeway that Frodo, or that Gandalf now has to start explaining things to Frodo. And who knows exactly where Gandalf stopped the night before when he did say, okay, we can't talk about this anymore. We need to wait till daylight. It's interesting for me to think on, you know, when exactly did this break in the story happen? And it's interesting where he picks up.
Yeah.
He picks up with the battle. Which battle is this?
I'm sorry. I'm reading here. I don't know. I can't remember the name of the battle.
Third Age? Battle of the Third Age?
There's a name.
Isol.
Well, it's Isildur.
Isildur is the guy that cuts it off his hand. That cuts the ring off of...
The Last Alliance, is that?
Is that what it's called? Gosh, I'm sorry. I'm reading along because he says, this is the Master Ring, the one ring to rule them all. And don't worry, some listener hopefully will correct us on that.
Yes,
This is the one ring that he lost many years ago to the great weakening of his power. He greatly desires it, but he must not get it. So Frodo is saying, how on earth? This ring! This ring, how did it come to me?
Gandalf says, buckle up, I'm about to tell you.
That is a very long story. The beginnings lie back in the black years, which only the lore masters now remember. The rumors that you have heard are true. He has indeed arisen again and left his hold in Mirkwood. and returned to his ancient fastness in the Dark Tower of Mordor. That is what really what Peter Jackson was trying to do with the Hobbit films.
I know, and it's so amazing to think back of all the time. You know, it's just, it all ties in so well.
Yeah, he did. I mean, again, he took a children's story or juvenile fiction and turned it into an adult story. That's hard to do, but the way that Peter Jackson did that, and credit has to go to Guillermo del Toro, who was originally supposed to be directing the films, and as well as Fran Walsh and everybody working on these films, but they pulled in the lore from, you know, the greater lore. We didn't get a touch on this in the first trilogy, right? This would have been great. What is this? What does this mean? You know, what he left his hold in Mirkwood. Well, we saw those in the Hobbit films.
Yes. Yeah.
I wish it need not have happened in my time, says Frodo. So do I, says Gandalf. And so do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given us. Let me jump in here real quick, pop in some Christian themes.
Hey, dude.
And then we'll get back to the story, because after all, that is part of the job of the Secret Fire podcast here. As servants of the Secret Fire, which we know Tolkien let us all in on what the Secret Fire was.
It's the Holy Spirit.
Amen. Gandalf is a servant of the Holy Spirit, he tells the Balrog on the bridge of Khazad Dûm. This thread is very strong, and it reminds me of the story of Esther. Quite simply. I wish it need not have happened in my time. I'm reading this again. So do I, said Gandalf, and so do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide, Frodo. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us. He continues on later on, says, there was more than one power at work, Frodo. This is written by J.R.R. Tolkien. J.R.R. Tolkien, we all know, was a very pious Catholic man. Mm-hmm. He also said that The Lord of the Rings is a religious and Catholic work. I'm just going off of memory. I should have pulled up the exact quote. Unconsciously, so at first, consciously in the revisions. Mm-hmm. So as he goes back, he says, whoa, there are a lot of Christian themes in here. And let me back up just a bit and pull in another quote from the book Finding God in the Lord of the Rings by Kent Brunner and Jim Ware. Because we will see when we get past this book and we move on, whenever we get to the Silmarillion, we're going to see, from the very beginnings of when Eru Iluvatar created via the Song of the Ainur everything, right? This creation in the vastness and the void. And they see this light coming, and some of them loved it so much that they said, we want to go there. We want to live there.
Mm-hmm.
And they entered into the creation. So when Gandalf says there was more than one power at work, Frodo, not only the Dark Lord, not only Sauron, focusing all of his dark intent on getting that ring, not only getting the ring, but also at the same time pulling all the evil creatures. That's how we'll get to Gollum. That's how he ends up at Mordor. Because he had been touched by the ring. He was a creepy bloke, and creepy blokes go to creepy places. Namely, Mordor. There was more than one power at work. We have the Dark Lord. What was that other power? Well, Kent Brunner and Jim Ware, again, in Finding God in the Lord of the Rings, say, and so Iluvatar, after the pattern of the biblical Jehovah, produces a drama performed in the theater of time. Its story will become the visible expression of the Ainur's chorus, including the song of a simple hobbit and the discord of an evil rebel. And somehow the former will resolve the latter. One theme will conquer another.
Hey, 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 hey.
So Gandalf also says, behind that, there was something else at work. Beyond any design of the ringmaker, I can put it no plainer than by saying that Bilbo was meant to find the ring and not by its maker. Sauron didn't mean for Bilbo to find this. Somebody else did. And you can find that on pages 55 and 56, at least in the Kindle version. But I think it kind of lines up pretty well. Frodo, I do really wish to destroy it, cried Frodo. Or, well, to have it destroyed. I'm not made for perilous quests. I wish I had never seen the ring. Why did it come to me? Why was I chosen? Such questions cannot be answered, said Gandalf. You may be sure that it was not for any merit that others do not possess, not for power or wisdom at any rate, but you have been chosen, and you must therefore use such strength and heart and wits as you have. Continuing on, and now, said the wizard, turning back to Frodo, the decision lies with you, but I will always help you. He laid his hand on Frodo's shoulder. I will help you bear this burden as long as it is yours to bear. But we must do something soon. The enemy is moving. No! Answered Frodo, coming back to himself out of the darkness and finding to his surprise that it was not dark and that out of the window he could see the sunlit garden. Or perhaps, yes, as far as I understand what you said. I suppose I must keep the ring and guard it. At least for the present, whatever it may do to me. Esther lived at a time, and her cousin, her adoptive father, much like how Bilbo adopted his cousin Frodo and became his uncle, right? Yeah. But anyway, Mordecai sends a message to Esther, who has just been made queen in order to replace Vashti. The queen that wouldn't, you know, act like a woman or whatever, you know, the king, well, we'll just call him Xerxes, what he wanted. And so this great drama plays out. But Mordecai gets word that Haman had gotten the king to write a decree that on such and such date, everybody in the empire, we're talking 100-something provinces, everybody on that date is to turn against the Jews, their neighbors, and slay them. And he gets word of this, Mordecai, and he sends a message to Esther in the palace and says, you need to do something about this. And she says, I can't do anything about it. I can't. You can't. You're not allowed to go in and talk to the king just on a whim. He has to summons you, right? The whole deal with the scepter, lowering the scepter. If she presents herself and he does not lower the scepter... You know, she presents herself unannounced. He doesn't lower the scepter. That's death for her. If she presents herself without being summoned and he lowers his golden scepter, then she's allowed to approach him and she's safe. But he hasn't called me. You don't just approach the king. Mordecai sent this reply to Esther. Don't think for a moment that because you're in the palace, you will escape when all other Jews are killed. If you keep quiet at a time like this, deliverance and relief for the Jews will arise from someplace else, but you and your relatives will die. Who knows if perhaps you were made queen for just such a time as this? Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai, go and gather together all the Jews of Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will do the same. And then, though it is against the law, I will go in to see the king. If I must die, I must die. That is, tell me. Tolkien was not influenced by that story in this exchange between Frodo and Gandalf. Why did it come to me? Why am I here? Well, because you were chosen. Because you were chosen. This is why you are here. And you can protect your people. You can protect all the little bunnies of Bunnyboro by going out. Going out. Frodo says, whatever, you know. Whatever it may do to me, I'll do it. Brendan, do I see a theme developing?
Oh, I think you do. I think you do. And I think it's interesting to consider that while Gandalf this whole time may have been trying to convince Frodo to destroy the ring for the sake of all Middle Earth, Frodo makes his choice based on his love and pity for his friends in the Shire. Gandalf is speaking macro. Frodo is still thinking micro.
He's thinking local.
He's thinking local. He's thinking for the best of his friends and neighbors, yeah. Even though his friends and neighbors treat him like dirt.
Yeah.
They think he's odd. They think he's cracked.
But he's going to do what he believes is the right thing to do.
Yeah. Regardless. And he does take that burden on himself. And like you said, this is where we see this, what I would say, the controlling theme.
What's a controlling theme?
I'm glad you asked, Michael.
Oh.
I'm so glad you asked. Let's think of it this way.
We've only been broadcasting together for going on 4 years. I'm learning the questions to ask.
Yeah, there you go. A controlling theme is best articulated in the form of a value and its cost.
Oh, okay.
So,
Mike, are you paying attention to this?
Yes, I am.
What is the value? What is the goal being pursued by Gandalf, by Frodo, by Bilbo back when it was his turn? What is this ultimate goal? It's to keep the darkness at bay.
Yes.
It's to keep the darkness away and keep it from hurting friends and loved ones. What is the cost that our characters are willing to pay in order to attain this value, to obtain, however you want to say it.
Retain. Put and attain? Ask me again, I'll tell you the same?
No, certainly not.
Oh.
That must be like an old-timey joke. It's
ageism.
It's simple acts of
ageism,
kindness and love.
Yes. Yeah.
Simple acts of what Tolkien would definitely describe as pity. And mercy. Frodo feels merciful toward his friends of the Shire, that he's willing to draw on this burden to himself. And drawing on the ring means drawing all that negative attention to him. All those who are hunting the ring, including the Dark Lord himself, he's willing to draw that attention away from the Shire on himself so as to save his friends and family. It could be said that the controlling theme of this trilogy of all of Middle Earth as a story is that simple acts of kindness and love keep the darkness at bay.
Hmm.
And it's not necessarily that that it's simple as in it's easy to do.
Right.
It's just, it's easy to understand. Well, if this means
easy
this.
Easy to understand.
Difficult to execute, and that's where the story comes from, is in the working out of this theme, carrying out of this theme, just as Frodo carries the ring. Now, that's a stretch of a metaphor. Don't listen to that.
Abuse it?
Yeah. Okay. But hey, that's what controlling theme is. It's the value and the cost. Articulating the value and the cost of a story. What are these characters willing to do in order to attain the goal that they desire?
Yeah.
Frodo is willing to take on that ring for himself through his own sense of pity and mercy and kindness and love. Now, that being said, Frodo still isn't perfect because we got to talk about Gollum.
Yes. Yeah, let's
talk. This whole story with Gollum, and I guess we can just work backwards from it, not to lose the fire that we started with this controlling theme, because Frodo is convinced that Gollum should die.
Yes.
Frodo was convinced that Bilbo should have killed him. He says, what a pity that Bilbo did not stab that vile creature when he had a chance. And Gandalf says pity. It was pity that stayed his hand. Pity and mercy, not to strike without need. And he has been well rewarded, Frodo. Be sure that he took so little hurt from the evil and escaped in the end, because he began his ownership of the ring so with pity.
And I love this. You have not seen him.
I had that coming up.
Oh, okay.
I had that coming up.
Okay.
But no, let's go on to that. Right after the passage I just read, Frodo, he's a little taken aback. He says, "Look, I'm sorry," said Frodo, "but I am frightened, and I do not feel any pity for Gollum." Gandalf says, you haven't seen him.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting to think that pity and mercy can be activated by seeing,
well, it's by being, using your being eyes. Being in close proximity, being yeah. there, being present.
Well, what does Patrick Mead say?
What does he say?
He says, loving everyone is
easy
because it's a concept.
Yes.
Loving those right in front of you is hard.
Because that's reality.
It's reality. And then he prompts us to do the hard thing.
Yes.
For Frodo, it's hard to have pity on Gollum.
Well, and Frodo says, no, I don't want to. I don't want to see him. Mm-hmm. I can't understand you. Do you mean to say that you and the elves have let him live on after all those horrible deeds? Now, at any rate, he is as bad as an orc and just an enemy. He deserves death.
Deserves it? I dare say he does. Many that live deserve death, and some that die deserve life. Can you give it to him? Oh, that's like a prick to the heart right there.
Then do not be too eager to deal out death in judgment.
Yeah.
Don't be too eager to do that. Mm-mm. That is a huge lesson for every one of us.
Yeah.
My heart tells me that he has some part to play yet for good or ill before the end. And when that comes, the pity of Bilbo may rule the fate of many. Yours.
Yeah, yours not least.
Wow.
And that's actually a point that should have got the sound clip. Dr. Peter Kraft brings up in his lecture, Christianity and the Lord of the Rings. He says, Bilbo's one act of kindness in sparing Gollum's life was the spark that changed Middle-earth forever.
And so we get to go on this fantastic journey, and, I mean, we're going to see amazing things, but it's all going to come back to that. Mm-hmm. A simple act of kindness and mercy. That's powerful.
Yep.
See, I was going to go and talk. I had a clip to play for Gollum, Smeagol, and stuff. I don't think that I need to now. And so let's go ahead and wind. As we're winding down the episode here, let's get to some more frivolity. Because this discussion is going to go on, and it comes down to, again, to talk about what we discussed already regarding Esther. Frodo says, I do really wish to destroy it. Or, well, to have it destroyed.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not made for perilous quests. goes on, he says, but you have been, Gandalf says, you've been chosen, and you must therefore use such strength and heart and wits as you have. But he says, but I have so little of any of these things. You are wise and powerful. Will you not take the ring? No, cried Gandalf, springing to his feet. With that power, I should have power too great and terrible, and over me the ring would gain a power still greater and more deadly. His eyes flashed, and his face was lit as by a fire. Do not tempt me. Oh, I love the sound of that fire. Are we still in Bag End, Micah?
Yes.
Frodo says, I should like to save the Shire if I could. Though there were times when I thought the inhabitants were too stupid and dull for words and have felt that an earthquake or an invasion of dragons might be good for them. This is exactly what you were talking about, Brendan, this controlling theme. Even though Frodo has been mistreated, and he admits it, hey, I wish, you know, dragons or an earthquake or something to take out these dumb folk.
Right.
But I don't feel like that now. I feel that as long as the Shire lies behind, safe and comfortable, I shall find wandering more bearable. I shall know that somewhere there is a firm foothold, even if my feet cannot stand there again. And he knows this means exile.
Yeah, excommunication.
And flight from danger into danger.
Mm-hmm. Hey, out of the frying pan into the fryer, you know what I mean?
Into the fryer?
I meant fire.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But he did not tell Gandalf, but as he was speaking, a great desire to follow Bilbo flamed up in his heart, to follow Bilbo and even perhaps to find him again.
Mm-hmm.
This is another theme. This is a minor theme. that's controlling Frodo. Are there minor controlling themes?
This is a, well, in theater, we would call them just objectives.
Okay.
Yeah, this is.
Not the super objective. It's an objective.
It's an objective for that one character. And right now he wants to be with Bilbo again.
Yeah.
He wants to find Bilbo and be with him.
Hey, but I don't think you need to go alone. Not if you know anyone you can trust and who would be willing to go by your side. And that you would be willing to take into unknown perils. Wow.
It says, be careful in choosing. Be careful of what you say, even to your closest friends. The enemy has many spies and many ways of hearing.
Yes. And suddenly he stopped as if listening. Frodo became aware that all was quiet inside and outside. Gandalf crept to one side of the window. Then, with a dart, he sprang to the sill.
Well, bless my beard. Sam Gamgee. And what might you be doing under Mr. Frodo's window?
Lord bless you, Mr. Gandalf, sir. Nothing! Leastways, I was just trimming the grass borders, if you follow me.
I don't. How long have you been eavesdropping?
Begging your pardon, sir, but there ain't no eaves at Bag End, and that's a fact.
Don't be a fool. What have you heard? Why did you listen?
Well, Mr. Frodo, sir, don't let him hurt me, sir. Don't let him turn me into anything unnatural. My old dad would take on so. I mean no harm, on my honor, sir.
He won't hurt you. But just you up and answer his questions straight away.
Well, sir, I heard a deal that I didn't understand about an enemy and rings and a fiery mountain and elves, sir. I listened because I couldn't help myself, if you know what I mean. I do love tales of that sort, and believe them, too. I'd dearly love to see some elves, sir.
What else did you hear?
But Mr. Frodo is going away, sir. And that's why I choked, which you heard, seemingly. I tried not to, sir, but it burst out of me. I was so upset.
It can't be helped, Sam. I have to go. But if you really care about me, you will keep that a dead secret. See? If you don't... If you even breathe a word of what you've heard, then I hope Gandalf will turn you into a spotted toad and fill the garden full of grass snakes.
Oh, no, sir!
I have thought of something better than that.
No, Mr. Gandalf, sir, please!
Something to shut your mouth and punish you properly for listening. You shall go away with Mr. Frodo.
Me, sir? Me, go and see elves and all? Hooray, sir!
That clip was taken from the 1981 BBC dramatization of The Lord of the Rings. And that was Michael Hordern as Gandalf, Ian Holm as Frodo.
I was going to ask who that was. It sounded...
And Bill Nighy as Sam. And that was, of course, before Bill Nighy obtained the voice of God and became Scrimgeour.
These are dark times.
That's the same guy.
Not the science guy?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's Bill Nighy, the science guy.
That's Nighy, not Nighy. And if anybody does not have that production, you can get it.
By production, it's a radio play?
Yes, it was. I can't remember how many parts and how many hours. I have all three parts.
Well, of course.
Audible, not a sponsor. But anyway, Frodo as Ian Holm. I mean, Frodo. Frodo playing the part of Ian Holm?
That'd be cool. That would be even more better.
Do you think he could do it?
I'd say so.
And that really takes us to the end of that chapter. Yep. Sam. I love Samwise Gamgee. We have a dog named after him. Does not live up to the name. However, does he, Micah?
No.
Micah, you got to talk more right now because your mom is going to listen to this show and then say Micah needs to talk more.
All right. I will try.
Let's recap. Let's throw out some thoughts. What did you learn from this chapter?
Well, a lot about the ring's history.
Yes.
A lot about, just how it came into this whole story of the Shire, how the ring entered the Shire, how Sauron's been looking for it.
Yeah.
Hasn't been able to find it because it was in the cave with Gollum. And now that Gollum was out, Gollum was captured by the Wood Elves in Mirkwood. He was all this stuff. Now the ring, and now that Sauron himself is regaining power, the ring is also waking up with it. We're starting to see that the ring is a character itself. That the ring is
practically sentient.
Yeah, the ring isn't just some trinket or bric-a-brac or whatever. The ring is a conscious being, a sentient being.
Yeah. Micah, what are there any thoughts, anything that, like, if you compare the movies to how it plays out, comparatively speaking to the book, anything that you really like what Peter Jackson did in the films, or that you wish that he had taken from this chapter?
Well, it's been a while since I watched the movies, but I remember that I wasn't satisfied with the amount, this scene in particular.
The time frame.
Yeah, because that is one of my favorite scenes, because in my opinion, it really reveals what kind of person Sam is, and also the scene where he's in the Green Dragon, or the Ivy Bush. Green Dragon?
Yeah, Green Dragon.
One of the two. That also, in my opinion, really starts to show Sam's character.
Yeah.
And why he would be so willing to go with Frodo. And because, in my opinion, he's not really a homebody. He just loves people.
That is a wonderful thing to say about somebody, isn't it?
Home is wherever his friends are. And
home is where the heart is. And his heart is spread.
Yeah.
He spreads it out. See, that's what we can talk about also, is not just the story. What do we get out of the story and the lore and history and wonderful things? Because we didn't touch on Smeagol, and there's some important things about Smeagol that, just real quick, when describing it, says, and he ceased to look up at the hilltops or the leaves on trees or the flowers opening in the air. His head and his eyes were downward. Downward. You know, that reminds me of Cain and Abel. And after Cain's sacrifice was rejected, no, I accept Abel's. Yours is not acceptable. And what did he do? He walked around with his face. Well, I mean, in his, Genesis,
his face had fallen.
Yes, Genesis chapter 4, verse 6, out of the ESV, the ESV. The Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry, and why has your face fallen? Why are you looking down?" That reminded me of Smeagol, his character. There is a character flaw to begin with. And so that when he gets the ring and he discovers, hey, nobody of my kin can see me, so he starts using that for dark, nefarious purposes. And they were kicking at him, and he was biting at their feet, and then they drove him out. Right? And what did he do? He just wanted to go deeper and deeper. He wanted to go to the roots of the mountains.
Mm-hmm. See, well, he was interested in beginnings. He would dive into deep pools, yep. And, you know, he just... I actually highlighted that, and I closed the window, but keep talking.
Oh.
I'm going to bring up something.
And so, you know, Tolkien really is much more than storytelling and this wonderful myth that he wanted to create. He's teaching us about people and character and value and chivalry and virtue is the word I'm looking for. Really, these things are virtuous. But even though it's like God, he cast Cain out of the garden to the land east of Nod. He didn't kill him, right? Showed him mercy. Like Gandalf is encouraging Frodo to show mercy. Like, have the kind of mercy that Bilbo had for him. You haven't seen him. He's a wretched creature.
Mm-hmm.
He's a wretched creature. And not only that, he's of hobbit kind. We didn't touch on that. So of the fathers of the fathers of the Stores. The
Stores, who are fond of the river.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you find that you wanted to bring up?
I did. Going back to, you know, what made Smeagol so wretched as he transformed into Gollum, and going back to his fascination with beginnings, he went to the roots of the mountains to find out, you know, how they became to be, And then there's this little quip. All the great secrets under the mountains had turned out to be just empty night. There was nothing more to find out, nothing worth doing, only nasty, furtive eating and resentful remembering.
Yes. Vanity. Chasing after the wind.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. We could learn a lot. He could learn a lot by reading Solomon's Proverbs and the Song of Solomon and Ecclesiastes. Of course, this was, as Peter Kraft points out, this is a pre-Christian story. This took place long before the Christian era, mm-hmm. So and probably long before Solomon, and probably those things weren't available to them, but they are truths. Yes, we covered this chapter pretty thoroughly.
We forgot to mention one iota.
Well, you better throw it out there
of a foreword,
okay?
And that is that we are briefly introduced to Aragorn.
Oh yes, how could I forget?
How could you?
The greatest
huntsman, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Traveler and huntsman of this age.
He helps Gandalf track down Gollum.
Well, and for that, you need to watch the independent film, The Hunt for Gollum. You can still find that. Go huntforgollum.com or something. Search it. Watch it. It's a great short film. Chris Bruchard produced that many years ago now. What, 5 or 6 years ago? The Hunt for Gollum, great, and it is what it fills in the gap of the story that Gandalf is just touching on. You know, oh, I have a friend, you know, that went and found him, and you know, Aragorn, and great movie. Hey, what part of this chapter stood out to you, dear listeners? We want to know what stood out to you and why it stood out to you. What effect does it have on you? What does it teach you? What can you learn? Or perhaps you just want to be frivolous and just say what you really enjoyed and why, just for the pure spectacle of it. Because a spectacle is fantastic in The Lord of the Rings, is it not? Just we'll give you all the different ways to contact us here in just a few moments. But first, let's go to the party tree. Because, Micah, I want to hear about your goings-on at the MAC, the Manchester Arts Center. You just finished up, you and your sisters, a production of The Matchmaker.
Yes.
And that was fantastic. Did you have a good time?
Yeah, I really did. I was really surprised at the outcome of that play. It got a lot more laughs than I thought it would.
Well, it was hysterical, and you guys all knew how to work the crowd and bring out the laughs and even ham it up when you needed to. You played the part of
Cornelius Hackle.
And what did you like most about playing that character?
Well, from a theater perspective, he's a very physical character.
Yeah.
And I actually had a lady give me a compliment. One of the biggest compliments I like to hear is your physical comedy was very good.
Yes.
And that character just oozed physical comedy.
He really was. And I'm saying this as his dad, of course, but it was awesome. You and your little partner who played the part of...
Barnaby something.
Barnaby. it was great. And it is physical comedy. And people really do respond to physical comedy, don't they, Brendan?
Mm-hmm.
There's something psychological about that. But it's just fun. It's good fun. So what's coming up?
Well, I believe... The first thing I'm going to perform is Shrek Jr., or Shrek the Musical.
Okay.
In which I'm playing Donkey.
And, Donkey!
Which is going to be a very fun role. It already Perfect. Is a fun role, yeah. Practicing it.
Layers!
Are you making waffles?
No.
In the morning?
Unfortunately, no. But I do get to say parfaits, which is fun.
Good. I love that line in there.
There you go.
What else?
And then next I'll be performing How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, which I'm playing Bud Frumpkin, which is the antagonist of the show.
Awesome. And that's an adult production, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you are one of the younger?
I'm the youngest. The age limit was 17 and up, and I'm like the only teenager below adulthood.
So that's going to be a lot of fun. Good. Looking forward to hearing more about that coming up. Brendan, have you been doing anything fun? No.
Just schoolwork.
And studying up for the Secret Fire podcast.
Yeah, that. FCC.
Well, and... we just recorded episode number 127 of Finding Christ in Cinema. You can listen to that at christincinema.com or search your favorite podcatcher for Finding Christ in Cinema. And what did we talk about today?
We talked about K-Pax.
Yeah, from the, 2001.
Yeah, the film with Kevin Spacey, Jeff Bridges... Whole cast of characters, excellent story, excellent messages, I might say.
Yes, and the news for Finding Christ in Cinema is that we are now airing on our local radio station here in Manchester, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to be pretty exciting. It starts on the 12th of February. We'll be airing
next Sunday.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing if we can touch some lives with film, silver screen classics and blockbuster hits of today. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, Finding Christ in Cinema. Again, that's at christincinema.com. Brendan?
He was about to sign off.
Yes. What I was. Well, we just finished that show. What is coming up next week, Lord willing, on the Secret Fire podcast?
Oh, next week we'll be hitting chapter 3. Three is company.
Three's company?
Mm-hmm.
Dun 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 dun.
Nope.
Come and knock on our door. We've been waiting for you. Where the kisses are hers and hers and his. Three's company too. I will have that ready in the sound cart to play and we will.
No, please.
No?
Please don't.
Three's company.
No.
All right. I don't know.
I'm sure you will. I'm sure you
will. Will you cut it out?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. That's from another show.
You need say no more. We'd best get a move on. There are still goblins about.
Oh, bother. More mountains?
No, don't you see? The sun is setting in the west, behind the mountains. We're on the other side, to the edge of the land beyond.
Before we leave, we have some party invitations to send out, and the Secret Fire podcast is live each Saturday for the time being, Lord willing, at about, we'll call it about 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time in the GCT Network studio. You can join us here for video and chat at gctnetwork.com/live.
And you can join us on the Arkenstone server in Lord of the Rings Online at lotro.com.
Yes, to find out more about the Secret Fire podcast as well as our other shows, including Finding Christ in Cinema, and we'll hold off on the echo on that. Our brothers in Texas, the Theonauts, visit our main website at gctnetwork.com.
Now, let's say you want to write us a good old snail mail letter.
That looks so good.
Email us at secretfire@gctnetwork.com,
mm-hmm.
or call us up on the Hobbit hotline at 507-407-GCTN or the backup emergency only Hobbit in case the Sackville Bagginses are listening.
Sure.
You use the emergency backup line.
If they jam up the phone line with spoons. Hey,
you know them. You know them. Call us at 507-407-4286.
Now, I suppose you think that was terribly clever.
Now, let's just say you want to listen to the good old podcast.
I do.
You can listen to iTunes, uh-huh. Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcast catcher.
Yes. I call them podcatchers.
Podcatcher, where finer podcasters serve. Search them all for the Secret Fire podcast.
It's pretty mind-blowing.
Want to hit us on Facebook? Facebook.com/SecretFirePodcast. Want to get at us on Twitter? Twitter.com/SecretFirecast.
That's right. Our theme song, Hobbit's Dance, is from the album Memories of Middle-Earth by Brobdignagian Bards. Say that 10 times real fast and find out more about them and buy CDs and other various forms of digital music. Visit their website at thebards.net. And until next time...
I regret to announce this is the end. I'm going now. I bid you all a very fond farewell.
Everybody say goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye. It was tied to an anvil.
You are tuned in to the GCT Network.
This is your Great Commission. This is your Great Commission transmission.
At gctnetwork.com.
This is your Great Commission transmission. This is your Great Commission transmission.
Has some power chosen Frodo for such a time as this? Ooh, we invite you to come along, join the fellowship, become a servant of the Secret Fire, right here on the Secret Fire podcast. No, I goofed it up.
What?
Because I'm thinking that I can recite this from rote. I got to start over.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess so.